This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. They both come in giftable boxes with savings up to $46 and free shipping for a limited time. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and Jerry's here too. And this is Stuff You Should Know, part of the ongoing, never-ending, stupendously outstanding animal editions.
That's right. And for us, Friday morning edition, which never happens. We had a little family issue yesterday, and you guys were very sweet and kind and agreed to punt the recording a day. And so now we're in our morning show routine.
That's right. I can't even begin to do a morning show host impression. I'd like to, but I can't bring myself to.
Who likes lizards?
That was pretty good, Chuck.
Yeah, and that's probably a morning show person would probably call this a lizard.
Yeah, good point. Because they're not lizards, they're amphibians. And what we're talking about are called axolotls. And before we get into it, I think we should give a hat tip to a guest researcher who helped us with the very initial research on axolotls. A listener named Charlize Flores, who, by the way, her grandma calls her Chuck, she mentioned.
Oh, that's very sweet. She sent us a sweet letter and a picture that she drew.
Yes, a picture of her axolotl, Boba. And she told us some pretty amazing initial things about axolotls. And she and her mom, Gabrielle, listened out in Omaha. So thank you very much to Charlize for helping us out with this one. I guess we should also thank Dave Ruse, too.
Yeah, of course. But Dave's not, what, like 6 years old? How old was Chuck?
She's 10 going into, she just started the fifth grade.
Oh, well, I feel like a dummy, too. And I'm a dad of an eight-year-old, and I guess too young. You never know.
You never know. You just can't tell at that age. You're like, are you three? Are you 15? I can't tell.
So should we talk pronunciation real quick? Because because of my screwy day yesterday, I meant 1,000 times to go look up sort of the indigenous pronunciation of what we call axolotl. Mm-hmm. And I failed to, but you were schooling me before we started recording. Schooling in a good way.
I got you covered.
Yeah.
So that very strange looking word is actually taken directly from the Nahuatl language, which is the language of the Aztec people. And they came up with this. We'll talk. Do you want to just go ahead and talk about that part now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good. So the word axolotl, what we call axolotl, is actually axolotl, even though it's spelled the exact same way. In the Nahuatl language, A-T-L is pronounced lut. And X is very often pronounced show. It can also be pronounced wa. It's kind of all over the place. It's like a utility baseball player. It can do whatever.
Wow, look at you.
And by the way, also the Aztecs were called the Mexica. And that X is a S-H-E in that case. So the axolotl or axolotl is named after the Aztec god Xolotl. X-O-L-O-T-L.
That's right. The god of fire and lightning, correct?
Also, what else?
Also the god of physical deformities and dogs and death. And I'm glad we're starting here because this sort of reinforces why the axolotl, by the way, which is a very, very cute little salamander amphibian. I think you did say amphibian.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think you haven't seen one, you probably have because they've kind of blown up the internet semi-recently with their cute smiles. But they're very important to the lore and the culture of Mexico because of the Aztec origins.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, this god, Xolotl, who, like we said, physical deformities, fire, lightning, death, and dogs.
Right. And so according to lore, Xolotl was escaping Quetzalcoatl, which is Xolotl's twin god sibling.
Mm-hmm.
And to escape, he transformed into three things. A maize plant, which
sure.
is Xolotl in Nahuatl language.
Mm-hmm.
Agave, which is Mesholot.
Mm-hmm.
And then a salamander, Axolotl. And he still was caught and killed. But I believe by transforming into those things, he made them exist, perchance. So the reason that the Axolotl is kind of like a big deal in Aztec culture is that they were very hyper-local to the Aztec people. They were where the Aztec were, and they were a huge food source, a source of medicine, and also, I guarantee, a source of amusement and delight, because I don't care what era or age or epoch you're living in, axolotls are one of the cutest animals on the planet.
They really are. I mean, there's something about that perma-smile that is undeniably cute and affectionate-looking. And I know this is humans putting their stuff on animals, but, you know, the thing smiles. What else can you say?
You can't. There's nothing you can't else deny you it. Need to say. But that's the thing about axolotls, Chuck, is, yes, if they were just that cute and it stopped there, they'd still be worth talking about. But they're really, really worth talking about. And this is what Charlie Flores was trying to explain to us, is that there's so many other amazing, astounding things about axolotls that this is just one of the most interesting animals on the planet, it turns out.
Here's your Disney movie. It's centered around, I'm surprised you haven't done this, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. It's centered around an axolotl,
okay.
of course.
Yeah. Named Axel.
But sure. Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
Thank you.
And it is, but it is, and you know, Disney movies always sort of, and you know, Pixar, all that stuff, they always sort of have their larger point to make about emotions or this or that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this one deals with mental illness, and you have an axolotl that is actually depressed, but smiles all the time anyway.
That's awesome.
And his little buddies have to help him out and see him through this.
Yeah, and like the climax of the film is where he manages to frown.
Right, maybe so.
That's pretty great, Chuck.
Yeah, just to put a sort of cherry on top of the original cultural story, though, when the Spanish came around as conquerors, they were like, oh man, this stuff is delicious. It was, they tried to... they tried to keep a lot of records, at least, of what was going on with the Aztec and, like, what was important to them culturally. I'm not going to say, like, so they could respect them or anything like that. But they did keep records, and they did learn about the axolotl and learn that it was a source of medicine. And they called it the food of the lords.
Mm-hmm.
And there were festivals. It was this, I mean, I don't want to eat one of these things, but they had tamale, axolotl tamales.
Mm-hmm.
And I like a tamale, so that's the only time I was like,
I could eat one of those if you wrapped it up in a tamale.
Yeah, but I really couldn't because all I could see is that smile in my brain.
So axolotls are, that would be tough to do, especially if the head's poking out the end of the tamale just looking
at
you.
Oh, man. No, you can't do that.
So I said axolotls were hyper-local to where the
big time.
Mexica, the Aztec lived. And they lived in a... like basically on a lake. Like Mexico City used to be an Aztec capital called Tenochtitlan. And Tenochtitlan was built basically on top of Lake, what is it, Texcoco?
I think probably Texcoco.
Texcoco, thank you. So Lake Texcoco is where the axolotl hails from.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, it's a salamander. And there are other salamanders that live in that area. But the axolotl only lived in the Lake Texcoco area. And in as the Spanish came along and said, you can't build a city on a lake. What are you, crazy? We're going to go ahead and drain this lake. one of the remnants of that lake was an even smaller body of water.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not only a smaller body of water, it's even harder to pronounce than Lake Texcoco.
It really is.
It's Lake Xochimilco. And friends, look up Xochimilco. It is not in any way, shape, or form, as far as an English speaker is concerned, spelled like it's pronounced.
Yeah.
It's Xochimilco. But mm-hmm. Lake Xochimilco is a very small body of water. It's basically a small system of freshwater canals that are the remnants of Lake Texcoco. And that is where axolotls live now. In the entire world, there's nowhere else, even in Mexico, there's nowhere else you will find an axolotl in the wild except for in Lake Xochimilco.
Yeah. And I'm actually going to Mexico City for the first time in November.
It's a very cool town.
I can't wait, man. And I'm not going to go on a axolotl tour. I don't know if they have those. I bet they do.
They do.
But they're generally not out during the day. But we'll get to all this stuff as we go, right? Should we start at the beginning?
Yeah, I thought we had started.
Well, historically, the beginning. I just mean the beginning of axolotls as a species, because they are amphibians, like you said, of the order Urodela.
Mm-hmm.
And that is all salamanders. The scientific name is Ambystoma mexicanum, which, very appropriate. Mm-hmm. I even know what that means. Ambystoma means blunt mouth. And when you see the axolotl, it kind of has a blunt looking mouth. So it all makes sense. And in Latin, amphibia for amphibia means double life. And it's called double life in amphibia because, as we all know, amphibians start out in water when they're hatched as little eggs. And they spend some time there as youngins, swimming around and using their gills. And then eventually they metamorphosize and transform into a land creature, which means they grow legs, their little tails shrink, and they learn to use their lungs. And those gills aren't useful anymore. And sometimes they even go away altogether, right?
Yes, that's a typical amphibian. That's just what they do. Yeah, the gills go away. They start breathing with their lungs, and they live on land. They go from living in the water to living in the land. It's what makes an amphibian an amphibian.
Except
with axolotls and a couple other species of amphibians. Mud puppies, I think, is one that they never leave the water. They're amphibians, but they don't amphibiate, essentially.
Yeah.
And it's something called neoteny, which is they stay forever young, just like that Rod Stewart song.
Yeah.
And another word for it is pedomorphic.
And like Rod Stewart.
Yeah, exactly. Although, no, that's not true at all. But that means that they, even in their adult form, even in, like, they're fully grown up, they can reproduce, they're drawing Social Security, they still are, not only look like their childhood form, for all intents and purposes, their body inside and out is still in the childhood form.
Yeah, they don't drop that tail like other Sallys do.
Mm-hmm.
They keep that tail. It's called a body fin because it kind of, you know, once you see it, it kind of looks like it runs up their body.
Yeah.
They keep those. Well, they keep those legs. Their legs wouldn't go away anyway, but they have those stubby little legs. They do have lungs, and they also still have those gills, which we'll talk about a little more in a second. But they basically breathe almost exclusively through their gills, and they also never use their legs to walk on dry land. So, you know, there's a term in Mexico, Mexican walking fish is what they can be called, which Dave very funnily points out, like, they are Mexican, but they're not fish and they don't walk. So it's a bit of a misnomer.
Yeah, just a touch. There's a theory as to why this is going on. Like, why would this happen? This doesn't really make any sense.
Like, why would they have legs?
Yeah, exactly. That's a great question. And one of the theories is that there was a point in time where they did amphibiate fully and make it out of the water. So they needed their legs. They needed their lungs. They do have little tiny lungs, but they're very undeveloped. So they can survive out of water for a very short time with those little tiny lungs, but not for very long. They're clearly not designed to stay out of water.
Yeah.
So the idea is that somewhere in their evolutionary history, they spent some time on land, but the place where they lived, either like Texcoco or Lake Xochimilco, was such a great environment for them, so ripe with food, so
abundant?
No, what's the opposite of abundant?
Oh, scarce?
So there were such scarce predators. It was just a perfect place to live. Man, a golden age to be an axolotl, I would say. And so they stayed in the water. And at some point in time, those genes got frozen in some individual organisms. And those got passed along. And those gave us axolotls. And Chuck, also, may I retort to myself?
Sure.
So that is one theory. My theory, which I would like to share, is axolotls are only about 10,000 years old as a species.
Okay.
They basically evolved from other salamanders that they live among. Mm-hmm. And they haven't fully, I believe, evolved into an entirely separate species. They can still procreate with other salamanders. And so I think what it is it's a remnant of the salamanders that they evolved from, that they haven't fully evolved out of that. And that if you looked at axolotls, you know, 100,000 years from now, they won't have any legs anymore.
And this is, is this out there at all? Is this all you?
I'm putting it out there, baby.
Okay. So they used to mate with their other salamander friends.
And they still can.
Like Rod Stewart.
That's right. That's right. He's had one or two salamanders in his time.
All right. I like it. That makes sense to me.
Thank you.
In 100,000 years, we'll know for sure.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Once the Earth is a big flaming ball of hot gas.
Oh, yeah. It'll have come and gone by then.
All right. So maybe we should take a break. I think that's a good setup. And we talk about how remarkable this thing is. Just hold on to your hats, everybody, because this sort of blew my mind. And it will blow yours as well right after this.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn about a pterosaur and call it pterodactyl? How to take a perfect poop and all about fractals? Genghis Khan, Attila the Hun, the Lizzie Borden murders and the cannibal runs. Don't explain everything to your brain. Explodes. It's Chuck and Josh. This stuff you should know. Word up, Jerry.
All right, so if you haven't looked up a picture of an axolotl by now, pull your car off or take a break from jogging or cleaning your house or whatever you do when you listen to us. Wake up, maybe, if you're sleeping.
Nice.
Look up a picture of that cute little thing. You've probably seen them on TikTok or YouTube. You've probably seen a bunch of very colorful axolotls. Mm-hmm. And those are bred specifically to sell as pets in those amazing colors. That is not what color they are in the wild. They are dark brownish, sort of greenish, or really, really black. And kids don't want that. Kids want a hot pink one. And so humans have made that possible.
Right. They want the Barbie version of axolotls, the Barbie edition.
Well, we all do. We want Barbie versions of everything, don't we?
Yeah, for sure. So there's pink, and the pink is usually pretty pale, but I would say their faces can be kind of hot pink.
Yeah.
White ones? Pale yellow, lavender, that's my favorite.
Yeah.
Model green, gray, and they also have glow-in-the-dark ones, which are a little bit misnamed because it's not glow-in-the-dark. They glow under UV lights because they have the same genes that some jellyfish do, and they were bred into them. This is not a natural thing, although apparently they can spontaneously generate that gene in the wild, weirdly enough. But the upshot of it is if you have a glow-in-the-dark axolotl, and you're showing it off with the black light, how it glows, you actually mm-hmm. don't want to do that very much because you're blasting them with UV radiation and their skin is so delicate, it's actually really bad for them.
Yeah, and if you're a teenage boy and your mom is in the room, you don't want to do that anyway, right?
What do you mean? I'm not catching that one.
That's all right. Adults will understand,
but
or most adults.
I'm an adult.
moving on. They are about 10 inches long, or they can grow up to 10 inches long. They have those big wide mouths that look sort of unusually large for their size and for their head. Mm-hmm. And they do have little teeth, top and bottom teeth. And their stubby little legs have 4 webbed toes on the front and 5 on the rear. And we got to talk about those gills, because the first thing you might notice, aside from that winning smile, mm-hmm. when you look at an axolotl, are those amazing feathery gills sticking out from the head. They don't look like a fish's gills that you would see, just sort of, you know, just like dumb old gills on the side of a fish head.
Aww.
Just opening back and forth like an air vent. These things are, as Dave says, magnificent. There's no other way to describe these wispy, feathery, branched feathers.
It almost looks like little pieces of coral coming off of it. There's three pair on each side of its head. No, there's a pair on each side of its head times 3.
Right, yeah.
Okay, Chuck, no more Friday morning recording sessions for me, okay?
Oh, that was some tough math.
And they look like flowy and branched and filigreed because they're essentially like our lungs.
Mm-hmm.
Our lungs have alveoli, these air sacs, and if you really look at a detail of our lungs, they're branched and feathery and filigreed because that expands the surface area for gas exchange. Same thing with the axolotl, except those are gills to them because they do the oxygen exchange or the gas exchange underwater, and they're on their head.
Yeah, and it looks like an adornment,
yeah.
Almost, you know?
Mm-hmm. Or a hairdo, like a Larry Fine hairdo from the Three Stooges.
Right. Oh, it's cuter than that.
I think Larry's hair was super cute.
Oh, okay. As I mentioned earlier, I kind of teased about an axolotl tour in Mexico City. I'm not sure how they do those, but they are generally not around during the day. They're pretty sedentary.
Yeah.
And they hide in the mud. Nighttime is the right time for the axolotl.
Mm-hmm.
They come out and eat basically anything that they can eat. They're carnivores, anything with a beating heart. Whether it's a worm or a mollusk or even a crustacean or a tiny fish,
mm-hmm.
An axolotl will chow down on them. And you mentioned earlier that they can, even though they never go through that metamorphosis that other amphibians do in order to, you know, live a life on land and do things like reproduce. They can reproduce. They are sexually mature at 6 months old, and they're just it's called the Peter Pan state. They're sort of stuck in this eternal childhood, but those children still want to have babies and do that thing, you know?
Yeah, so how do they do it?
Well, like many animals, there's a little dancing ritual. Mm-hmm. It's called a mating waltz, where the male and the female kind of swim very tightly together. They get their cloacas and rub them against each other. Mm-hmm. Things are getting a little steamy down there in the lake.
Okay.
And then the male says, "Here you go. Here's a big cone full of sperm." And the female says, "Well, thank you very much. I will use my cloaca to accept that and fertilize my eggs." And those eggs are a lot. There are about 300 to 1,000 fertilized eggs. What I wondered is how, I mean, I know we'll talk about why they're so endangered, but if they're laying that many eggs, how many come to fruition? Because that's a lot of eggs.
I got you. I found on some message boards, I don't even know if they call them that any longer, but on the internet, yeah, from people who raise axolotls, that they're actually, they a lot of them do, like more than half. Uh-huh. It was a news serve.
Oh, wow.
I saw somebody predict about 80% will hatch, which is a big deal. If you have
a
female and a male axolotl in your tank, you really have to keep an eye out for egg sacs floating around, because you'll have a lot of axolotls on your hands.
Yeah, and they if you get one as a pet, and we'll talk about care a little bit at the end, but be prepared to have that thing for a while, because in captivity, they can live up to 25 years. In the wild, about 10 to 15.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember, we talked about the Proteus salamander a long time ago.
In our biospeology episode.
That's right. That was a good, creepy episode. Mm-hmm. Those things can live to be 100. So it's not unusual for a Sally to have a long life.
Yeah. And like you said, in captivity, up to 25 years. And I just want to make sure that everybody who's buying axolotls as pets these days knows that, like, you're
25 years.
You're going to have graduated college and had your first job and maybe even have a kid while your axolotl's still around. So keep that in mind.
Well, in the Disney movie, maybe that's why the axolotl's suppressed. That might be a little too Toy Story, that the kid sort of doesn't care anymore.
Sure.
But hey, you never know.
Yeah, and we couldn't do that. They flushed him down the toilet, because that's like Finding Nemo, right?
Is that how Nemo got back into the wild?
I feel like that happened at some point. I could be making that up, though.
It kind of drifted in and out of some of those, you know?
He just zoned out.
Well, I mean, a lot of those I really like, but then, you know, when you have a kid, you're watching so many, sometimes you're working and, you know Nemo's down there, but you don't remember how he got there.
You know, I liked Finding Nemo overall, but moment to moment, I didn't like that movie very much.
But the whole is greater than the sum of its fishy parts.
Yes. Yeah. Well put. Well put.
All right. All right. So we haven't blown your mind yet. Everyone's like, all right, they don't metamorphosize. Not the biggest deal in the world, guys. Here's where the mind-blowing stuff comes in. Overall, salamanders and newts can regrow stuff. They can regenerate tissue. They can regrow a tail. We all know that.
Sure.
They can regrow a limb. That's fine, and they come out usually okay.
It's no big whoop.
But the axolotl can, well, you know what? I should read, actually, what Stephanie Roy says. This is a researcher from the University of Montreal.
Can you do your Stephanie Roy impression while you read it?
Sure. Here we go. You can cut the spinal cord. She sounds a lot like me.
Yeah.
You can cut the spinal cord, crush it, remove a segment, and it will regenerate. You can cut the limbs at any level, the wrist, the elbow, the upper arm. This all sounds very sadistic, by the way.
Yeah.
And it will regenerate, and it's perfect. There's nothing missing. There's no scarring on the skin at the site of amputation. Every tissue is replaced. They can regenerate the same limb 50, 60, 100 times. Parentheses. Trust me, I've cut off a lot of legs of axolotls. Mm-hmm. In parentheses. And every time, perfect.
Yeah, and what's crazy is, like, this continues throughout their life. Like, they can do this when they're very young. They can do it when they're very old. Apparently, the only change is that it just takes longer the older they are. But that new leg, that new tail, it's as good as new every time, no matter how old they are. And that's pretty mind-blowing in and of itself. It gets even crazier than that, Chuck.
Let's hear it.
In addition to, like, extremities and limbs and tails and stuff, they can do the same thing with organs.
Yeah.
And, like, important organs, too, like the heart and the brain and their spinal cord. They can regrow it good as new every time.
Yeah. It's really amazing. And if you think they should study this stuff to see if humans, you know, could potentially do something like this mm-hmm. with a little help from axolotl stuff.
Right.
They are studying this stuff because, and they've already found some pretty good breakthroughs, but axolotls are very, very valuable to study. And what they've learned so far as these limbs go and other things is you get that little limb cut off or something, mm-hmm. and the cells nearest to that limb wound differentiate immediately. So that means it's sort of like a stem cell. That means they can become any type of cell kind of instantaneously, and they form a little pile around these undifferentiated cells, mm-hmm. and that's called a blastoma, helps you to visualize it more. It's also called a regeneration bud. Mm. So it's like a little plant bud or something, basically. We scar up like dummies.
There's your problem.
We form scar, like I cut off your arm, and you're going to start forming scar tissue. Axolotls say, no, we're going to grow that thing back with this blastoma.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that. They generate stem cells, bone cells, muscle, nerves, whatever you need to replicate perfectly whatever is now missing.
Yeah, which is pretty amazing considering we have pretty much the same genes we figured out. The axolotl, so they sequenced an axolotl genome in 2018. I believe it's the largest genome ever sequenced because the axolotl's genome is second only to the Australian lungfish in size and number of base pairs. Humans have 3 billion base pairs. We're doing pretty good with 3 billion base pairs. It's kind of to be expected. Sure. That's a lot.
Uh-huh.
Axolotls have 10, almost 11 times the number of base pairs that humans do, 32 billion base pairs in their genome. And so after examining all this, scientists said, like, hey, we've got some of these genes. What's different, they think, is that with axolotls, those genes are stuck in the on position. Either they never make the hormone that would turn those genes off, or they continue to produce the hormone that keeps those genes on. Regardless, the fact that those genes are turned on in them makes them able to just regrow like brand new every time throughout their life.
Yeah, it's really something else. There's another cool theory about why this might be true, evolutionarily speaking. And there are scientists that think that maybe at one point in their history, when they were in that lake and they were landlocked, and food may have been abundant at one time, but maybe at one point there were too many axolotls and food wasn't as abundant. Mm-hmm. And so they may have turned cannibalistic and said, hey, friend, I know we've been hanging out a lot lately, but your rear leg is looking pretty tasty to me. And so I'm just going to bite that off and eat it if you don't mind. And that happened so much that the axolotls who thrived were the ones who could grow those limbs back quicker and survive.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Not bad.
I don't have a rival theory for that one.
Ah, shoot.
I could make one up real quick.
Let's hear it.
No, I can't. It's Friday morning. Man. Maybe if it were Thursday afternoon, but yeah.
I know. You're right.
So you might say like, oh, that's cool. I want to try this at home with my axolotl. I'm going to cut off its right front leg and half of its brain and see what happens.
Please don't.
Don't, because they do have pain receptors, so they can feel pain. Apparently, they have a high threshold of pain, but they will still feel pain if you essentially torture them for your own amusement. So don't do that to your axolotl at home. And by the way, these aren't messages to Charlize Flores, because based on her preliminary research, she knows what she's doing. She's taking good care of Boba.
Totally. Another amazing superpower that these little guys have is not only can they grow back things and grow back organs, but they can transplant organs perfectly, just like they can grow things back. They don't have a learned immune system like we do. When you get, and we did an episode on organ transplant many years ago. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, a lot of times, in fact, about a third of the time, the human body will reject the organ because we have a learned immune system. It'll just say, no, shouldn't be on my body.
Get this crud out of here.
Yeah, get this thing out of here. But axolotls don't have that. So you can transplant It's like 100% non-rejection rate for organ transplants.
Yeah. But I mean, that's for axolotl, right? You couldn't put like a pig heart in it or anything.
I don't think they've tried, but probably you're right, there, I would say.
I don't know if we said it or not, but the different kinds of like lab-grown types and varieties of axolotls are called morphs. Did you say that?
No.
So there's a type of morph called the firefly morph. And when it's in the embryonic stage, they'll take, if it's a like a black or dark mottled axolotl, they'll take a tail from a white axolotl or pink one and vice versa. And they will transplant the tail in the embryonic stage and the thing grows up and it's like black with a white tail or white with a black tail. I don't think it's very cool looking, but I think some people do.
Yeah. Another superpower is that they are 1,000 more times resistant to cancer than other mammals. It's pretty amazing. And again, researchers are studying this because, mm-hmm. like, could the cure for cancer potentially be in these cute little sallies? And, you know, you never know. They have treated breast cancer patients with axolotl egg serum, and it halted the growth of cancerous tumors. So you never know.
Yeah, they looked into it, and they think what happened was that the axolotl juice reprogrammed the tumor-suppressing genes that had been turned off epigenetically, went in and turned them back on. And so the tumor-fighting proteins and hormones were able to fight that tumor and stop it from growing.
Wow.
Yeah, wow is right. And I say that big wow calls for a message break. What do you think?
I agree.
Learning stuff with Joshua and Charles, stuff you should know.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn about a pterosaur and call it pterodactyl? How to take a perfect poop and all about fractals? Genghis Khan, Attila the Hun, the Lizzie Borden murders and the cannibal runs. Don't explain everything to your brain. Explodes. Just Chuck and Josh. This stuff you should know. Word up, Jerry.
So, Chuck, there's a big irony with axolotls, aside from the irony that they can reproduce even though they're young and yada, yada. They are critically endangered in the wild because, again, there's one small, tiny body of water in outside of Mexico City where they live, and they live nowhere else in the wild. But there's countless axolotls thriving and living in captivity. Because it was very clear early on in the mid-19th century to at least some French physicians that they would make great lab animals to experiment and test on. And so they took some sample axolotls to France. And from that point on, they just kept breeding them and breeding them and breeding them. And now the world has tons of axolotls. They're just not around in the wild much.
Yeah, big time. You know, we talked about the habitat loss. There's also a pollution problem. Also, the government introduced carp, I believe, and tilapia into where the axolotls were, into that lake. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was for a food source, basically, for fishermen. But they eat the plants where the axolotls lay eggs, so that was a problem. And here's some numbers for you. In 1998, there were about 6,000 axolotls per square kilometer, and that is down to 35 per square kilometer today, which is very sad.
Yeah, and again, critically endangered. And one of the reasons why there's so many in captivity, I was saying, is that they do make a great lab animal. Apparently, they're experimented on second or third only to rats and mice.
Wow.
Yeah, that's surprising. That must be as far as vertebrates go. But they that's where the pink axolotls come from. Mm-hmm. And all the other specimens, apparently there were what are called leucistic axolotls. They're almost albino, not quite, but they were in that group of 34 axolotls that were first taken to Paris. And so every pink axolotl is descended from those. I think there were like six original ones. But the reason that they work so well in labs is that they have some really interesting traits.
Yeah, they are very easy to breed in captivity.
Check.
They're easy to keep alive.
If you know what you're doing, check.
Sure, because we said, you know, they live a long time. Apparently, they have very big cells, and they're easy to look at and easy to examine. And I think the eggs are 30 times larger than a human's.
Roughly the size of a beach ball.
Their embryonic neurons are 600 times larger. Mm-hmm. What's that?
It's the size of the Grand Canyon.
Okay. In Big Macs, sorry.
Right.
And, you know, they're just ideal model organisms for the lab. And so that's why, and, you know, because of their superpowers, that's why they are studied a lot.
Yeah, so we found a few things from them already. We've figured out how organs develop in vertebrates, including us, because like I said, we realized when we scan their genome that we have a lot of the same genes. We use those genes to grow limbs ourselves and lose our tails ourselves while we're in utero. But after we're born, probably right before we're born, those genes get turned off. So we've figured out, thanks to the axolotl, how those genes work and which ones are important. We figured out how spina bifida works and where it comes from. And thyroid hormones. You wanted those isolated? Axolotl's got you covered.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. If you're, and did you already say that, the fact that they're growing like tons and tons of these in a lab doesn't mean you can just throw them back in a lake because they have a shortage there, right?
I did not say that.
Well, I just said it because that's what I was thinking this whole time I was researching it was, well, why then, since they are critically endangered, can't you just release, you know, tens of thousands of these? But it just doesn't work that way. These morphs are bred for the lab. They're not bred for that lake. And apparently it just doesn't work.
It'd be like moving your city cousin in with your country cousin.
That's right.
Like you might have a decent sitcom on your hands, but it's only going to last a season or two.
That's right. It all falls apart on Super Tuesday.
Exactly. So, yeah, they can't do that. That's not to say that they won't find a place where they could introduce them to the wild. It's just apparently taking them back to where they're from or where they originated is not on the table.
Yeah. And if you're wondering, well, what are they doing? They are trying, because the axolotl is such a culturally important thing, scientifically important animal. It is a flagship species that they designated, I think, semi-recently, which helps obviously protect it. They are now building sheltered areas that don't have those grass-eating tilapia. They're blocking them out so they can lay those eggs safely where they had for, you know, eons. Actually, how long is an eon? I probably misuse that.
I don't know. Let's say
I'm sure I'll get an email.
Pretty long time.
Okay, pretty long time. The tour guides and the locals have all been, you know, educated and trained on best practices for like fishing and doing those tours. And, you know, hopefully all that stuff makes a difference and really sinks in, because it is a beloved cultural creature.
So beloved, in fact, Chuck, that in 2020, Mexico said, hey, everybody, check out our new 50 peso bill. And everybody's like, oh, that's pretty cool. All right. And then they said, no, turn it over.
Right.
And everybody turned it over. They're like, there's an axolotl on the back of the 50 peso bill now. And Mexico's government said, yep, pretty cool.
Yeah. Every time they do that trick, they put it on the wrong side and just say, watch this.
Yeah, exactly.
I tell them to turn it over. It kills.
What's funny is the axolotl appears to be floating above the water, weirdly.
Yeah.
It's a strange jam, but it's cute as a button on the back of the 50 peso bill.
Yeah, I agree. And also, shout out to Minecraft. That's a game that my daughter is obsessed with now, as many youngins are. Mm-hmm. And there is an axolotl in Minecraft.
Okay, I couldn't figure this out. What's a mob in Minecraft? It seems to be referred to like an individual thing.
I don't know.
Okay. Apparently.
No, I don't play, so I don't know.
Okay, fair enough.
You're like, but do you talk to your daughter and pay attention to things she says?
I'm curious, though. Ask her and let me know, will you?
Yeah, yeah. I'll just, she can text you now.
Oh, yeah. Tell her to text me what a mob is.
All right. She doesn't have a phone, but she does have a little email address, so she
can that's cute.
Text her friends occasionally.
And she does have thumbs.
And she does have thumbs, and they work pretty well. Get ready for lots of memes, by the way.
What do you mean? Oh, she's going to send me some?
If I give Ruby your phone number.
Okay. Does she have the good ones?
I don't even know how to get a meme in a text. I have no idea. And the first thing she did was send me like 60 in a row.
It's copy and paste, buddy.
I know, but I don't even know where to find them.
It's that's a big first step.
Yeah, I'm not going to give her your phone number. Your life will change, and not in a great way.
Okay, well, then send me screenshots of her text to you then.
All right.
Leave me out of it.
Sorry.
So Mexico City in 2017 said, hey, let's have an emoji contest. Because as is the case with cities these days, every city has to have its own official emoji. And guess what the emojis are based on in Mexico City?
Tamales?
Tamales. With the axolotl head sticking out of the end.
Oh, no.
No, just axolotls doing stuff.
That's great. I love it. So before we finish up, you found some good stuff about axolotl care. We are not experts, but you did find some stuff. Where did you find this?
I'll have to tell you in a moment, but go ahead.
Okay. And again, you should, you know, if you're getting into the axolotl game as pet-wise, do all your own research. Don't just listen to the next, you know, 5 minutes and think I got it covered. This is just sort of a broad overview, right?
Right. Yeah. So there's a few things that you need to remember with axolotls. They're very sensitive to water temperature and water quality. Obviously, you want to start with fresh water, but you want to start with filtered fresh water to begin with. But you can't just put fresh water in there and say, hey, it's all good. Get in there, axolotl. You want to tweak it enough so that the axolotl can be happy and thrive in there.
Yeah. You also want to get a fishnet. You don't want to handle as much as you might want to pet this thing. They have very sensitive skin. It's very easily damaged. And so you don't want to pick the thing up or pet it or anything like that. So get out your little fishnet when you're changing water and stuff like that and feed them a lot, right?
Yes. You want to feed them live stuff if possible, especially when they're young, because they actually have a predator response. So it's got to be moving for them to be like, oh, that's food. They can eat dead stuff later on as they get older, but you want to also be very selective. Don't go out and like save some money and harvest your own bloodworms if you even know how to do that. You want to buy them from a reputable bloodworm dealer, which you can find basically on any corner in any town in America.
Sure.
But the reason why is because those things are typically like disease-free, parasite-free, and if they aren't, those can basically make your axolotl sick.
That's right. You don't want to do that. When tank shopping, too, you also want to, and this is true with any fish, and I think a common mistake is that you don't get the right size tank and habitat for whatever it is. They need a little bit of room. So a 20-gallon aquarium is what they recommend for, like, just one single axolotl. If you want more than one, they say you really shouldn't do that. You should just have one. You don't get five or six because you think it's five or six times as cute. But if you are some sort of professional aquarium type and you do want to house more than one, then that tank has to grow, you know, proportionally.
Yeah. The other thing I was saying about the water, you need to tweak it. You want to keep your water temperature between 60 and 64 degrees Fahrenheit. Go figure it out yourself for Celsius. And the pH, you want somewhere between 6.5 and 8, but ideally about 7.4 to 7.6, which is basically right in there at neutral. They like neutral fresh water at 60 to 64 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's right. And they aren't like fish. You can't just throw like fish gravel in there. And
oh, that's a big one.
Like they need their own really specific habitat, the substrate. And, you know, little shards of gravel can really, really harm an axolotl. It can, they tend to just sort of gulp down water, and in that water could be little tiny shards of gravel. So maybe loose sand could be a foundation. Definitely don't just think get a fish tank and fish tank stuff and it'll work for your axolotl.
Yeah, and some people say, well, I'm just not going to put anything down. They can just, I'll leave the bottom of the tank bare, which your axolotl won't cut their skin on anything, but they'll also be freaked out because everything's so slippery. So sand is a good thing, and they also can burrow into sand if they're nervous or scared or want to sleep too.
That's right.
There's a lot more out there. By the way, that was from the Atlantic City Aquarium. They know what they're talking about. And you should probably do a lot more research before you actually get your axolotl and set its tank up. Okay.
That's right. And also now, since we are wrapping this up, this means that we can go listen to the 99% Invisible episode, Model Organism, which also covers the axolotl. But Dave, who helped us with this, was like, don't listen to that first because you're just going to want to steal it all. because Roman and the gang there they do such a great job, and they have forever, and Roman is a friend of the show, and I can't wait to go listen to it. I'm sure it's amazing.
Same here. Well, thanks to Roman for making that amazing episode. Thanks to Charlie's Flores and her mom, Gabrielle, for sending in that preliminary research. Thanks to Dave for helping us out. And thanks to you for listening. Since I thanked you guys for listening and Chuck just said, okay, tacitly by his silence, that means it's time for listener mail.
That's right. And also thanks to Charlize Theron.
Sure.
And Rod Stewart. We got to shout him out.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, we've been picking on him. Yeah. I was just watching videos of old Sir Rod. Is he a sir?
I believe so, yeah.
Sir Rod. Yeah.
Thanks for being such a great sport, Rod.
All right. I'm going to call this one. Which one should I do? I'll do this one. I'll call this Bede. Bede.
Oh, man.
What's wrong?
I wanted to go the rest of my life without correcting that.
Well, sorry. Hey, guys, longtime listener of Stuff You Should Know from Wollongong, Australia.
Okay.
Wollongong?
I guarantee that's not how it's pronounced.
Wollongong. All you have to do to be Australian is sound surprised at everything. Uh-huh. Wollongong.
I think that was a New Zealand accent, too, by the way.
Probably. Hey, guys, heard your podcast on how the English language developed, and have to correct your pronunciation of B-E-D-E. Saint B-E-D-E is a famous Catholic saint who was a learned scholar from the Jarrow area of northern England. He's famous for writing a history of the English-speaking people in English as opposed to Latin. I think he also had something to do with the change to the calendar and using B.C. and A.D. and prefixes for dates before and after the birth of Jesus. Now, this is something deserving of a separate stuff you should know topic one day. Anyway, as I am named after him, I can assure you that the pronunciation of his name is the same as Bede. Is that a disappointment?
Yes, it's a disappointment, but I'm not even convinced. I mean, that's what Bede says.
Well, Bede says, I've long had to put up with people mispronouncing my name, Beedy, Beedi, and could
Beedi.
Not...
Beedi?
Well, that's what he says. And could not help but correct your attempts to get his name right. Keep up the great work. Cheers. That is from Beedi Richie.
Thanks a lot, Beedi, or Bede. I will call you Bede because you said that's how your name is pronounced.
Of course.
But that doesn't necessarily mean by extension, unless you have a time machine handy that I don't know about, that Beedy's name wasn't pronounced Beedi.
Agreedy.
Well, if you want to get in touch with us like Bede did, thanks a lot, by the way, Bede, you can send us an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.